Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. When Harry met Sally, when Bogart met Bacall, those are historic moments for many Americans. But will when Trump met Putin in Alaska shape up to be another? We'll find out later because the meeting is set to happen today, which is Friday, August 15th, 2025. What should we expect? Here's the Moscow bureau chief for CBS News, Beth Noble, to kick things off.
Technically, Vladimir Putin is under sanctions and is not supposed to visit the United States at all, where, you know, technically he could face arrest. So obviously that's not going to happen. But, you know, it's symbolic, isn't it, that Alaska is a territory that the Americans purchased from Russia, well, more than 100 years ago. So it seems like some interesting middle ground. And, you know, maybe it's symbolic that President Trump is trying to find some middle ground with President Putin.
We just had a news alert cross out of Berlin from the Associated Press, the German chancellor saying that European leaders and Zelensky had a, quote, constructive meeting with Trump about Ukraine. But Zelensky will not be in attendance. So how do you see his interests being presented?
So one of the things that President Trump said when he first announced that there was going to be this meeting with President Putin is that President Trump wanted it to be the first meeting. So he envisions that he'll sit down with President Putin, kind of have a listening session, perhaps maybe make some proposals. And then if things go well, there'd be a second meeting with President Zelensky present as well. We don't know if that's going to happen. There's no indication yet whether President Zelensky is going to fly to Alaska to be standing by in case President Putin agrees to see him when he agrees to see President Putin. It's kind of unclear what's going to happen next. But European leaders and President Zelensky are all very, very worried about what might happen in that meeting. And they're trying to make it clear to President Trump that he can't cut a deal with President Putin to end the war in Ukraine without Ukraine being across it. And also European leaders giving their permission, because it's very likely that they're going to be involved in trying to keep the peace.
The phone calls between President Trump and Putin have been characterized as monologues by Mr. Putin. What do you expect to happen when they meet face to face? You told us last week that Putin is very good at reading people.
Oh, yeah. He's a former KGB agent, and that's what he does for a living, is read people and maybe tell them what they want to hear, or maybe tell them what he wants to say. So it's really unclear what's going to happen. And in their previous meeting, the two, which took place, their big summit, it happened in Helsinki in 2018. We're told that the two presidents met alone just with interpreters, with no one to take notes, no one to whisper in their ears about things that they were saying that may or may not have been true, or what the other person might have been saying. So we don't even know the format for this coming meeting. But I think it's very realistic that President Trump should really be on his toes and be very careful and listen to President Putin, but take what he's saying with a grain of salt, or maybe many grains of salt.
And both Trump and Putin have floated the exchange of land, territories. Is this a deal breaker for Zelensky?
Well, you know, we don't know what will happen. I mean, one of the things that President Zelensky has said all along is that he doesn't want to give Russia any of Ukraine, but he certainly doesn't want to give pieces of Ukraine that Russia has not even occupied. And so one of the things that Russia has been pushing for is that it has partial control of some Ukrainian territories, you know, kind of like regions that are like our states, that he has partial control of some states and is like, well, what we really want is the whole state. And so Ukraine is like, well, why would we do that? We don't even want to give you the pieces of our states that you occupy now. So there's so many issues that they have to figure out. I think a peace deal here is possible, and a lot of people want it, including, you know, certainly the Ukrainian people are really sick of being attacked. But getting to yes on this deal is going to be very, very complicated, even for an experienced deal maker like President Trump.
CBS News military analyst Jeff McCoughlin is next up, and he's discussing some of the finer points of the meeting.
What specific proposals for a peace deal will be on the table?
Well, I think the first of all is Mr. Trump has already said that we're going to talk about land swaps, but it's unclear to me what those land swaps mean, because all the land we're talking about is Ukrainian land that has been seized by the Russians since they invaded in 2022. So as a consequence, if you recall yesterday, there was a meeting, virtual meeting involving all European leaders chaired by the German chancellor. Mr. Zelensky was there to talk to Mr. Trump about the insistence that there had to be security guarantees in any final agreement to guarantee Ukrainian security. And furthermore, an insistence that while the Russians want to negotiate a final settlement of territory and then move to a ceasefire, what Mr. Trump should insist upon is a ceasefire to begin with and then a beginning of negotiations on various topics.
So what role will Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and his government play in the discussions, given that they're not directly participating in the summit?
Yeah, that's their concern. You know, Margie, there's a saying in Washington, if you're not at the table, you're probably on the menu. And that is the concern of the Ukrainians. Frankly, I think it's the concern of the Europeans. You know, Europeans think long about history. And they'll recall that in 1945 at Yalta, ironically, in the Crimea, Franklin Roosevelt, an American president, met a Soviet Russian leader, Joseph Stalin, along with Winston Churchill. And they divided up the map of Europe and basically locked countries away into being occupied by the Soviet Union, being part of their sphere of influence for many, many, many decades. So they worried that this might happen again. Or they might point out to you, have some have to me, back in 1938, when, of course, Neville Chamberlain, a superpower at the time in Great Britain, will negotiate with Adolf Hitler the fate of Czechoslovakia. And the Czechs were not present at those tables as well. So that is a concern by Zelensky, a concern by the Europeans. I think that's why that meeting yesterday was held virtually with the allies and Zelensky coming out of Berlin to try to emphasize that point to Mr. Trump.
What are the potential very severe consequences that President Trump has threatened Russia if an agreement is not reached?
Well, he's talked about major sanctions against the Russians, but the Russians will brush that off because, frankly, there's very little economic interchange between the United States and the Russian Federation. I don't even think it amounts to $2 billion a year right now. But the real problem would be, of course, secondary sanctions. If, in fact, Mr. Trump was to go through with those threats, which would be sanctions on India, those have been threatened, and China. And the reason those are important is because those two countries import large amounts of Russian oil and natural gas, which buttresses the Russian economy, as do other countries like Turkey and Brazil, as well as the continuation of current Russian sanctions. He might also decide that the United States will continue to provide and prioritize military assistance to Ukraine, even if it is in the format that we're doing right now, where the Europeans purchase it and then provide to the Ukrainians. And furthermore, he probably could emphasize that the United States will continue to provide intelligence assistance to the Ukrainians as they use that to target Russians and Russian aggression against Ukraine.
CBS News, Major Garrett has tips for signals from Putin that people should be watching for during the meeting.
Well, very simply, if there is a new Russian offensive leading up to it, that's very bad. That's fronting Trump off in a very direct way and killing more Ukrainians. And Zelensky has warned about this. He says, we see troop movements, preparation for an offensive. Now, that could just be muscle flexing of the Russians to sort of intensify maybe the Ukrainians' desire for peace. I don't think that's going to work, but it's definitely a flex to talk as the kids do. The other thing to watch is if there can be an agreement that has any validity, and I stress the any validity part, to a ceasefire, because the Ukrainians have agreed to ceasefire terms. The Russians haven't. Now, the Russians might, and President Trump might say they agreed to a ceasefire, and then the Russians could interpret the living up to that ceasefire fundamentally differently than the Ukrainians and the Americans. And there's a history for this. So ceasefire is second, no offensive either right up to or right after the Alaska meeting. Those are the two things to keep an eye on.
Zelensky has continued to say throughout this, we want all of our country.
Of course.
We want all of our land.
Of course.
That we're not accepting any of these trades. The president has been very outspoken about that, including the days leading up this about possible land trades. And
Right. Clearly
Putin wants that. From your sourcing within CBS News, with their conversation with the other people close to Zelensky, or Zelensky directly. Is he just saying that, or is he willing to accept some loss of land to end this war?
Well, nobody at CBS News knows what Zelensky is ultimately willing to accept. We don't have those kind of sources. I don't think anyone does. I don't think the Ukrainian press does. I don't think anyone in the major European capitals who cover the story aggressively hour by hour have any idea what he will ultimately accept if he has to accept. And I know the way the president thinks. He talks about land swaps, looking to the Ukrainians and say, look, if I get the Russians to swap out something they've already taken by military force, you better grab it because you can't get it and I might get it for you. Will you have to give up things that the Russians already occupy and you can't dislodge them from? Probably. But if I'm giving you something back and you're only exchanging it for things you've already lost, maybe that's not such a bad deal. President Trump thinks in highly transactional and sometimes brilliantly simplistic ways. Not always, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't want to suggest otherwise. He does have a way of simplifying things to their absolute essence and talking about them out loud because he's like, I'm not going to dance around this stuff. We don't know what he is or isn't dancing around or what the contours of this will be. But anyone in Zelensky's position can only say one thing right now, which is you get nothing.
Yeah.
You can say nothing less than that
right.
until you're forced to say something different.
President Donald Trump wrote a book called The Art of the Deal. But what negotiating tactics does he have planned for this potentially historic meeting with the Russian leader? Newell Normand at WWL Radio in New Orleans has some suggestions.
Hi, folks. We're back with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. A very consequential meeting that could be had Friday. Tell us your thoughts.
No doubt about it, Newell. This could be, as you said, the most consequential meeting, certainly, that we've had with the Russians. That might bring this war to some kind of a ceasefire or conclusion. The war's going on for over 3 years now. And really, we're bringing Mr. Putin out of isolation in many, many ways. But, you know, there's really, I think, a lot of concern. And something you said at the top, I think, needs to be underscored. And that is, you never go into a meeting like this at this level without the willingness to say no. Otherwise, you can be manipulated. I think one of the most stunning negotiations that was similar was, of course, when Ronald Reagan beat Gorbachev in Iceland, I think in 1987, if I am correct, to negotiate deep reductions in nuclear forces. They were moving very close to a deal. At the last minute, Gorbachev said to Reagan, well, we can't sign this unless you now also agree something new, that you will not construct your missile defenses, so-called Star Wars. And Reagan looked at him and said, no. And he walked away. So many people call that a failure. I actually think that was a success because Reagan stuck to his guns on what he thought was essential for the United States. In this case, I think Mr. Trump needs to stick off in a focus that's pretty binary. And that is, we want a ceasefire. We want a ceasefire right now. And once we got that, then we're happy to negotiate perhaps anything you want to talk about. And Mr. Putin wants it the other way around. He wants to negotiate territorial swaps. Oh, by the way, those swaps are all for Ukrainian territory. I don't know what the Ukrainians are getting. They don't own any Russian territory. Recognition that they'll not be a member of NATO, reduction in their military forces, no peacekeeping, no presence, no joining NATO. He basically wants to make it into a satellite of the Russian Federation. He wants that up front as a precondition to going to a ceasefire. So hopefully Mr. Trump understands that this is a binary choice. If need be, he needs to say no.
Yeah, it's interesting the way that the Russians have characterized this. I was watching Russian TV the other day, and there was a military guy, I can't remember his name. I can't pronounce many of them's name, but anyway.
I understand.
Ukrainians are like family to us. Ukraine did not leave us. The West stole them. and I'm listening to this rhetoric, and I'm like, what the hell are these people talking about?
Well, they forget a lot of history. And quickly, if you go back to the end of the Soviet Union in 1991, it was the Union of Socialist Republics, plural. And they would say, that's where we are. And in 1991, the Soviet Union dissolved. We know that. Those leaders of all those republics met in Tashkent, and they agreed on the dissolution, and they agreed on the borders. And the Russian Federation accepted what the border was between what was the Ukraine and what was the Russian Federation. They agreed. They signed off on that. the Ukrainians would subsequently transfer all the nuclear weapons that were on their territory to the Russian Federation. In return, they were provided in the Budapest Memorandum guarantees by the Russians, by the United States, and by the United Kingdom that Ukrainian sovereignty would be respected. That didn't work. Didn't happen. And the Russians in 2014 will invade. They will seize Crimea, and they will instigate a war in the Donbass, which would kill over 10,000 people. They would sign two accords called the Minsk I and Minsk II, again, recognizing the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Did they agree to that? Sure they did. Did they respect that? Nope. And they invaded again in 2022. So if you're Mr. Zelensky, all this discussion of territorial swaps is incredibly uninteresting. What you want to talk about is security guarantees. Security guarantees. How do we put in place measures whereby Ukraine can maintain its sovereignty as a country and deter or prevent the Russians from doing this again? Because as you rightly point out, for many Russians, Mr. Putin included, this is Russian territory. And way back in 2009, Putin would meet with George Bush when he was president in Romania at a NATO conference and tell him, well, you know, George, Ukraine, there's no such thing as Ukraine. And even very recently, as late as late June, Putin has said the same thing in speeches and his aspiration to make it part of the Russian Federation. And in essence, what Putin's ultimate goal is, he wants to be Peter the Great and reestablish the territory of the Russian Empire. It's not about the Soviet Union or communism or anything. This is all about Russian nationalism.
Here's more from Mark Cox at KFDK Radio.
All right, we've got Jim Talent on the line with us this morning, former Missouri senator, and what's your take on it?
Well, the only reason Putin is meeting at all is because he knew Trump was going to impose sanctions. So right there, it's a point gained for the president. He knows, he's now found out how bad Putin doesn't want him to impose the sanctions.
Yes.
Now, what Putin's going to try to do is he's going to try and get before negotiation what he can't get at negotiations. And it's one of two categories of things, or both of them. A limitation on Ukrainian sovereignty going forward, and in particular, their ability to rearm, you know, have relationships with the West. And the other is just big swaths of territory in Donetsk province that Putin wants because Ukraine has prepared a defense in depth there. In other words, it's and he can't take it himself. I mean, it's impossible for him to do that. So what's most likely, I think, is that nothing is going to come out of this substantively, and then we're going to be back. The president will have a decision about imposing sanctions, and my guess is he will. And by the way, I mean, Trump has forgotten more about negotiations than Senator Blumenthal knows. So,
thank you.
So, I mean, with all due respect, I mean, this is a media. We've talked before about this, Mark, about how the war to this point has been an enormous strategic loss for Russia, and that isn't changing. And I think Putin has dug himself into a very big hole. We don't want it to continue because it's not in our interest to continue. It's really not in anybody's interest for it to continue. But I think Putin is afraid if the war ends, he's going to have to give an accounting to the Russian people about how much it cost and how little they gained. And he doesn't want to do that.
I agree with you completely.
I know Trump had that conversation with Zelensky yesterday. And he gave it a 10, I guess a 10 out of 10 mm-hmm. for how productive it was. I'm so curious what that would look like, because he, you know, Trump had some strong words for Putin ahead of this meeting in Alaska, saying, you know, he better be willing to actually have it be fruitful. Otherwise, this is a waste of our time.
And he said, I'm going to know within 2 minutes, and he will. Yeah. I mean, the president, and I'm a very strong supporter of the president, as you guys know. I think he's doing a great job. Whatever you think of him, he knows how to negotiate. I mean, he knew what Putin was going to try and do. This is an attempt by Putin to get Trump not to impose the sanctions, or at least to delay it without having to get to the table. Because if Putin agrees to a ceasefire and goes to the table, which is what Trump wants, it's going to be very difficult for him to restart the war. Trump understands that. Putin understands that. That's the logic of negotiations. So Putin is going to try and avoid that and get what he wants from the American president without having to sit across the table from Zelensky. And I don't think Trump is going to give it to him. Now, we'll see. And if he, you know, if I think the president's made a mistake, I'll say so. But I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either. I'm looking forward to what comes out of there.
Let's wrap things up with Tara Servatius at WORD Radio. She has a take that's uniquely her own, And to kick it off, she wants you to imagine the summit through the eyes of someone unusual, Vladimir Putin himself. Here's Tara.
And everything I've laid out for you, the fakeness, the lies, the crafting of the Russia collusion hoax. Pretend for a moment you're not American, you're not Republican, pretend you're Putin for a moment, and then watch it. You're watching the heads of, this is terrifying, and you're spying on them so effectively, you know they know that you did not hack that election, that you do not control Donald Trump. You know that Hillary Clinton hatched the whole plot. In fact, John Brennan goes to the White House in the summer of 2016, head of the CIA, and briefs Obama, says, look, the Russians are pissed. They know Hillary Clinton has made this up. And watch the Democrats on TV. This is an act of war. They're trying to subvert our democracy. This is a coup by Vladimir Putin. Look at it from his perspective for a minute. Just look at it. I'm going to explain this meeting to you, why we have to have this meeting. And you're a little concerned. It sure looks like they're setting up a war. You see him, you see Barack Obama put tanks on your border and troops in retaliation for the coup that you know is fake. And you know they know you know it's fake. Then 6 CIA bases open along your borders. My source on that is the New York Times. Russia begs and pleads for years, going back to 2014, for an international team to go in and investigate them. They're ours. Now they've got an existential threat on their border that dates back to 2014. It sure looks like they're setting up a war. But you hold fire. You hold your fire. You don't want to go to war. But then, in retaliation for the fake spying, collusion, and we weren't learned yesterday, hacking of U.S. boards of election, which we now know did not happen. That was declassified. That was actually federal contractors hired by Hillary. They faked the hacking and blamed it on Russia. But the sanctions were surreal. Oh boy, were they real. And they crippled the Russian economy. The Senate voted 98-2 and the House voted 419-3. July 2017 in favor of a bill that sanctioned Russia's energy sector. Folks, 60% of their economy is based on energy. We crippled their economy. We used the Russia collusion hoax as the way. And you know who signed it? Donald Trump, because he had no choice. Pretend you're Vladimir Putin. What do? And then the people who run the deep state win the election. And within 72 hours of Biden stealing that election, Russian troops start to gather on the border. Because you know what they know they need? They need a buffer zone. We do all the same. So Donald Trump needs to sit down, and he knows this. He knows this inherently, with Vladimir Putin and have a face-to-face conversation. You can't do this over the phone. Why? Because the evil deep state that has come for them both with lies, smears, allegations, and war tried to kill them both off. Trump, 700 years in prison. Vladimir Putin, they are victims of one and the same. They cannot have a phone conversation. Deep state's listening and looking to leak all of it. What do? Trump's got to sit down face-to-face with him in a way that the deep state can't spy on, and have a real conversation. And in that conversation is the one thing that Trump can't have out there. I know you need a buffer zone that is a swath of Ukraine, and I'm going to let you have it. But you can't go with these crazy land grabs. You got to stop. You got to trust me. And here's the weird thing. Putin does. It's an incredible act of trust for Putin to literally step foot on our soil. If Democrats were in charge, he'd be arrested right away. Oh, he's not going to get the red carpet treatment they gave Iran. And the possibility that Putin is facing of assassination by rogue parts of the deep state is very real. This is an incredible risk he's taking to sit down with Trump. What does that mean? Well, Trump's gotten by the cojones. His economy is on the brink now. Due to our fake sanctions and the real ones, Trump is looking at putting on with the tariffs. He can't withstand it. He can't fight anymore. We fought to a draw. It is amazing that Russia has been able to sustain this. They're much stronger than we thought. But it's time to stop now. And this is the beginning. So you know what? Say a prayer. Because you know what? Thermonuclear war, not really on my schedule. And Trump's got a lot. Folks, Trump has got to wrap this thing up. Because if he doesn't decisively wrap it up by the end of this term, they are going to revert to the plans that Kamala had, that Charles Brown, Joint Chiefs of Staff, laid out. Draft and our young people on the front lines in Ukraine. Our Air Force in the air. Our missiles hitting Russia. And the risk of thermonuclear war. Nobody wants that. So say a prayer that this works out, because there's a lot of benefits to peace. And we sure could use the rare earth minerals.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.